Manx Radio's 2016 election coverage.
Good evening, I'm Roger Watterson, and welcome to another of the election programmes in which we talk to a retiring member of the House of Keys who will be seeking re-election in the September general election. The new House of Keys constituency of Ayr and Mytil is in the far north of the Isle of Man and is made up by joining together of the two present constituencies of the same names. It stretches along part of the west coast, and it includes Andreas, Bride, Balaff, Jerby and Lazare, and the Kirkmichael town and surrounding districts, and it covers a large land area in Manx terms. It'll take some effort on behalf of the candidates to get around and see all those who can vote. There is a total of 4,858 registered voters. The retiring member for Mytil is Alfred Cannon. He was elected to the House of Keys in 2011 and during his term of office has held a number of posts. The most significant of his current positions are the Chairman of the Manx Utilities Authority, a member of the Department of Economic Development and Chairman of the Public Accounts Committee. Well, Alfred, thank you for joining us this evening.
Good evening, Roger.
Now, we're looking now at election. You've been 5 years in your term of office, and you've described them as 5 years as challenging. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think it's been hard in a number of ways. I set out in government to be allowed a clear and credible voice on behalf of my constituents and to stand up for their rights. One of the issues with government that I found is that right at the very, very beginning, the delivery plan for the 5 years or the term of office of this government was never really clearly set out. What we got were three objectives, if you like, of growing the economy, rebalancing the book and protecting the vulnerable. But we never really understood how that was being how that was going to happen, how that was going to be done, and of course what actually happened in the end, particularly over the first three and a half, four years of this government, was that we entered into this sort of silo mentality where departments ran off and started cutting left, right and centre and coming forward with policies to reduce spending. And none of it really, in my view, tied in. And what's absolutely critical, I think, for the next...
Tied into what?
Well, tied into one central overarching plan or vision for the island. what we get... let me take, for example, preschool education, which was one of the issues that I opposed. Preschool education was cut in 2012. If you may remember, we went to... the funding was cut. We went to a voucher system. And a lot of people, I think, lost out at that particular point in time. Fast forward 4 years, last week in Tynwald, what did we find? We found that preschool funding was increased again. So the government's almost come full circle on that particular issue. But that's one example where I think the thought process has not been very joined up, and that we've had the departments acting in their silos. So
that particular point you just raised, though, could be to the benefit, couldn't it? It could illustrate that government has done something, realised it hasn't worked, and done something about fixing it.
Well, what we need to do, instead of sort of contradicting ourselves, I think, Roger, is when we set up a new plan for government, this next government, if I'm elected, then I want to see a plan that is about growing the island as a whole. When we talk about economic growth, for example, I think we become automatically too siloed in our thinking. We need to think now about growing the island as a whole and what is best for the island. And all these bits and parts come into a part of the jigsaw in terms of making the island a better place, in terms of making it attractive for businesses, and particularly making it attractive and value for the people that live here. And a lot of people, I think, have felt isolated because of what's happened in the last 5 years.
So this
years.
Is the last,
and that's the challenge that we've got to face up to.
Well, this is 5 years that you two have been in office. So we have to say then that, because you say now on your current declaration that you're committed to ensure that the government spending commitments are well planned, streamlined and fair to the benefits of society. You are committed to it, but just how effective can you be? I mean, if we look back on the past, it looks that you've highlighted all these issues, but they've still gone on.
I don't think you can act in complete isolation in the House of Keys. You have to find people with the right or similar views as you with the, what you regard as the right approach, and they have to work together. I think that's become apparent over the last couple of years, and in fact, you will have seen that more and more happening, increasingly so, particularly amongst backbenchers, where we've used our joint initiatives, if you like, to come together and to challenge the government on issues where we think they've not been approaching the matter either fairly or in the right manner. So, for example, on public sector pensions, there was a number of us who really worked to try and actually find a better solution and to highlight the inconsistencies with the existing approach. I think similarly on state pensions, there's been two or three of us that have worked together. So a lot of these issues, you can't just act in isolation. But I've not been afraid to stand up to government by myself where I think that they haven't been acting fairly or there's been a flaw in their approach.
Well, I don't doubt that. But what I'm trying to find out really is, knowing how Timbald sometimes works in the way that it does, that one person or a group of people can actually raise some very good points, very good challenges, but they just completely fall by the wayside.
Well, part of the
so
problem.
So, what effective is it? How effective is it to challenge?
I think in any democracy, first of all, it's right that people challenge and offer alternatives, because otherwise the democratic system really isn't being effective. The other point is that time and time again over the last 5 years, what I've found is that government has shied away from active scrutiny. In other words, it hasn't wanted it. And now I'll take state pensions as a good example of that. In March 2015, I called for a pensions working select committee to be set up to scrutinise the reforms that were being brought forward on state pensions and the breaking of the reciprocal agreement. That didn't get through. But that didn't get through because it faced very, very, very strong opposition from the Council of Ministers, from Treasury. And basically that, I think, was enough to prevent that scrutiny happening, because Tim Walz took fright. But also, can I just finish this? And then they've rejected that scrutiny again. I think Lord Lisvain was right. He saw the cracks straight away, and he has said that actually, in his report, if this is going to work successfully, you need scrutiny. Now, personally, I think scrutiny is a valuable tool for government in terms of its policy making and pursuit of active policies, if you like, that are in force and in operation, because having that challenge, if the challenge is good, then it gives the person who is responding to that challenge the opportunity to highlight all the strengths of their argument, and also if there are weaknesses, then those flaws can be exposed and things can be put right.
Well,
so we shouldn't be afraid of active
though,
scrutiny.
We're talking about active scrutiny. We're talking about organised scrutiny, probably, in the sense that there should be provisions within the new House to allow this. But one person is a voice crying in the wilderness, aren't they?
Under the system that you have with the block vote, the Council of Ministers, and the way that things are incorporated within the political system that we have and within Timbald, then yes, people, if you choose to stand in isolation, then you will be a lone wolf crying in the wilderness. But sometimes those calls do get traction, and they do resonate with people, and they do occasionally lead to some corrective action or people paying attention. So I think the important thing about politics is that you've got to be true to yourself. So if you believe that something is wrong, then you must stand up for those rights or for that for the pursuit of what you believe to be right, because eventually people can make a difference. But it's pointless trying to hide away or trying to do things behind the scenes, because politics is about the public perception. It is about the public knowing what's going on, and that's very much part of what I want to see going forward, is much more scrutiny, much more awareness of what is actively taking place in terms of the formation of policy, not just the government's plan shoved out to consultation. Right. We've got to have a better process,
so
and that process will come from
what
scrutiny.
What part would you have to play in that? I mean, how that's a an interesting point on a wish list. How would you take that wish, what you want to see, into what is going to happen?
What part will I be supporting, if I'm elected, I will be supporting many of the recommendations from Lord Lisvain. Mm. I think he's hit the nail on the head.
Including more power to civil servants? In
a number of fronts. The point is, Roger, if you give power to civil servants, then there's absolutely the clear argument that you've got to have the proper scrutiny. But it's not about power for civil servants. It's about politicians working together to form the right policies, not walking hand in hand with senior civil servants and overseeing operations. What we've got to do as politicians...
Is that what you think is happening today?
I do think that's happening. And what I think has got to happen now is that when Tynwald reforms, is that particularly when it comes to the Council of Ministers, they have got to set out a set of clear policies that resonates very clearly with their vision. That programme of government has to come to the floor of Tynwald, as Lord Lisvain suggested. And I think that's then going to lead to better outcomes for government, because civil servants are going to be clearer in terms of what government has to do. And I also think that will also then lead to a much better relationship between between government and also the people of the island, who will also understand exactly what the government's trying to do.
Do you think people do understand what is going on? We talk about this, and those of us who are involved in some form of political activity, whether it's as a politician or a journalist or whatever, have a fairly good idea what's going on. Just how many of your constituents do you think really understand all of this?
Well, part of the problem is, Roger, is that a lot of government documentation and plans are far, far too complicated. Wading through these strategy documents can often take hours, and you've got to read absolutely every line for line, word for word, just to make sure that it's absolutely phrased correctly. Because what you'll find is somebody going off at a tangent. We've got to cut some of this bureaucracy, if you like, in half. And what we've got to deliver.
So how would you do that?
Well, I think the first step, Roger, is to have a one-size-fits-all plan. Now, I brought that up right at the very beginning of my term in office with the Chief Minister in public in Tynwald, and I said to him during a debate, what we need is a plan for the island that incorporates everything that you're setting out to do, and he rejected that. But if the Mayor of London can produce one for 7 million Londoners, why can't the government on the Isle of Man produce a clear, comprehensive... an understandable plan for the island.
So why not? You tell me why you think that is the case. You've identified the problem. What causes it?
Well, I think the cause may well be the fact that the Council of Ministers appears to have carried on in the same way for years and years and years. And of course, you know, people have done things the same way, and it hasn't really mattered because there's been a lot of money around until, of course, 2010, 2011, when the VAT cut started to impact. And then, of course, what you saw was a complete change of circumstances and a complete necessity to almost reverse everything that the Isle of Man had been doing in terms of its spending approach. That's thrown a lot of people out of their comfort zones. The problem is, I don't think the council of ministers and politicians have adapted very well to that.
Is that because of understanding, or is that because of, as indeed the chief minister said himself, that there is a sort of vested interest in them? People are unwilling to damage their own positions.
Well, I think that people act as individuals. You get your minister's role, and off you go to your department, and you decide what's happening. I think what's got to happen is that the eight or so members of the Council of Ministers have got to have the political will to drive forward a proper vision for the island. That vision's got to be translated into a workable plan, and I mean a workable plan, one that clearly sets out what we will do, because so far we seem to have failed not to do that, and then you get on and deliver.
Not clear when you talk about formulating these things, who is going to do the formulating? I mean, it's not just one person, it's got to be a team. This Council of Ministers, for instance, in the present personnel, are going to be a few short after the election. There's going to be new faces in there. I mean, if we were offered it, would you like to be a member of the Council of Ministers?
Well, I've always said that I will do what I deem is right. to help the island progress and go forward. And that means holding a minister's role, then absolutely. I mean, the fact is I was never offered a minister's role in the last government.
But this is the next term of office.
In the next term of office, absolutely. And I mean, I expect to play, if I got elected, I would expect to play a significant role in trying to take the island forward to the next to the next stage that it needs to go in terms of its growth and development.
Now, your first manifesto on the first election said that at that time that the Isle of Man's greatest challenges are coming over the next 25 years. Those challenges remain today. You go on. So, in other words, you're implying that there's been no progress, but surely there must have been some.
Well, there has been some progress in some areas. But because of government's insistence on this sort of salami slicing approach, if you like, to its budgets, the fact that it hasn't been brought together to take everything forward almost as one nation, then a lot, in many ways, we haven't progressed forward. What we've got to do now is set ourselves out to overcome those sorts of challenges and set a vision for the island, you know, a modern progressive island that is going to take itself forward with the right growth, the right investment, and the right attitude across society, and that we're not seen just to benefit, one section of society over the other. So that kind of essence of spirit, if you like, has got to be very much part of government's thinking now going forward.
You're chairman of the Manx Utilities Authority, the MUA. Now, that you've had a fairly turbulent time there too, because during your period of office there, we've all had some considerable increase in our rates, effectively our electricity charges, and the sewage tax. I mean, that has been quite a controversial line, but you took that on and you actually implemented most of it.
Well, absolutely. When I got asked to take that, it was pretty obvious to me that this was going to be a huge challenge. We had to transition effectively three organisations into one and come to terms with significant cuts to the funding that had been provided from Treasury, up to £10 million that was primarily being used for sewerage. Mm. And of course, that meant we had to bring forward charging. Now, I came in the year after the flat rate charge had been introduced. Clearly, there was a lot of comment and ill feeling being created publicly because of the flat rate. That's why I immediately instigated a review and brought about the rates-based charge. I think as a result of that charge, then there are now many, many, many people much better off in terms of the increases than they would have been under the old system. Not only that, but last year we came in £6 million under our budget, so we're almost £6 million ahead of where we were scheduled to be. We've brought everybody together. I think it's a very, very good functioning unit. And of course, we did bring down the unit price of electricity earlier this year. It's gone down 16 pence, but there was a small increase. But overall, that kept it at a neutral basis. So electricity prices were kept neutral. We've constantly got that under review. Of course, the gas price situation is helping us, but we've got a forward buying policy. We've increased the levels on the forward buying policy to take full advantage on that front. And you'll see, of course, across the island, we've continued to push forward with the regional sewerage strategy. So, and we're £12 million now under budget on that, because we've been extremely careful about our capital purchases. So actually, yes, it has been publicly quite a difficult time because of the public feeling around, particularly around the sewerage charge. But actually, when you look at the hard facts, I think the Manx Utilities Authority at the moment is in very good shape to go forward. And of course, we're looking at new initiatives now around where we can find more cost improvements. We've reduced staff numbers. We've taken down the headcount over £50,000. We've reduced that. The staff as a whole are being encouraged to look for new cost-saving ideas. And we're just rolling out a new business plan for the next 4 years, which we're taking down to all the staff at the moment. And of course, we hope to be pushing that out further across to the public in due course. So yeah. I think actually, you know, a very, very challenging role. I admit you can never stand still in these positions. But actually, I think that in many ways, the Manx Utilities Authority is in a very good position.
You probably illustrated something there. The work that you must have had to do in the middle of all that you've just listed, obviously focused and had to focus a lot of your attention and your mind on it. So is it right that you do take on a job like that then? Because at the other hand, you're talking about political philosophy and changing the whole style and operation of Turnbull's attitude to things. It's a very different task, isn't it? There's two different functions here, and they're running parallel with each other. One sounds of it might take over the other.
Yeah, and indeed, I mean, I think if you read the Lisvain report, it's questionable whether there should be a politician in charge of, you know, the Manx Utilities Authority. Having said that, we've been through a fairly traumatic situation with what was formerly the MEA. You know, in terms of my role, it's obviously been enhanced by the quality of the board that we've got. But in terms of that difference, I think the key thing, Roger, is that you have to approach the whole matter really focusing, keeping focused on the outcomes. And when you talk about a plan for the island, when I talk about a plan for the island, you've got to try and bring all these different areas into that plan, into the line of thinking about their role for taking the island forward. So, for example, when you're looking at somebody like the MUA, if we're talking about economic growth, when helping businesses, attracting businesses to the island, then clearly, you know, the MUA has a role to play in terms of making the infrastructure work to its maximum capacity at the best cost. We talk about making sure, obviously, the water in the sewerage is functioning properly. We talk about also with the MUA, because, of course, we've got that the cable link, that's actually functioning, and we're working on that at the moment to push that up to much higher capacity. So all these things do come together, and you can combine the roles, but you've got to come together and really be prepared to focus on what the vision is and the part of government that you're actually working with or responsible for policy for to bring it together.
We need to cover one other point, because you are very much on record for opposing the plans for the public service pensions, the new schemes that are about, which are said that are absolutely necessary, otherwise it'll raid the money out of the necessary funds for government at a later date. And this is the scheme that's come up with, which is a long-term one and seems to be supported by most of the unions and everybody else, but you're not in favour of it.
Well, no, because I wanted a clearer outcome from the public sector pensions problems that we've got. And as you know, I was actually more in favour of seeing the schemes closed to new members and us working through our problems from that point. As it is at the moment, the solution that's being offered, yes, it has been supported by the unions, but of course we wait to see what the workforce themselves have to say. To me, again, we've separated out the problem. We've put it, part of the legacy has been, or the legacy has been sealed off, if you like. Everybody's rights have been protected there, and then we're dealing on an ongoing basis. But as you know, the cost rises year on year. I think that we would have had a better framework, a better solution to go forward by closing to new entrants and working through our problems from that point. But as it is, there's a decision being made at the moment. If the workforce accept that, then the scheme's under review every 3 years anyway. And if it's not meeting its performance targets, then absolutely we'll be back on the case on that, and we'll be looking for changes to make it more secure.
Now we're right at the end of the programme. Now, just let me ask you the one question. People who are listening in your constituency today, you want them to vote for you in September. Can you give me within literally 45 seconds what's in it for them to put a cross against your name?
Well, I think my track record so far demonstrates that I have fought on principle, the right principle, I believe, on a number of issues. I fought for fairness, to make sure that reforms do impact fairly across society. And of course, you know, a lot of my work has been focused on making sure that everybody in the middle, who traditionally are the ones that get caught out, the hard-working families, they're the ones that I want to focus on. Let's create an island where those people who are working hard for themselves and for their families are the focus of our attention, and let's not allow ourselves to be detracted by swings either to the top end of that or to the bottom. Let's keep ourselves on track and fight for them.
Well, thank you. In this evening's programme, we've been talking to Alfred Cannon, the retiring member of the House of Keys for Michael, who'll be seeking re-election to the House of Keys in September to serve the newly formed constituency of Ayr and Michael. The programme was produced by Catherine Nicol. I'm Roger Watterson. Good evening.
Keep up to date with the latest House of Keys general election 2016 coverage on manxradio.com.